Warning, this episode of The Kissel includes language that might be sensitive for some listeners, including topics such as suicide and death. If you are experiencing issues or thoughts of suicide, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or chat online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Thanks for joining me. Sometimes I have an interview where I forget it's an interview because the conversation is just so good. And that's exactly what happened when I talked to Corey Cataldo about his new film, Without Ward, which, by the way, is coming out this week, March 25th. You can watch it on iTunes, Apple TV, Google, Vudu, Amazon. Look for it. Go to their website. Check it out.
WithoutWardFilm.com.
I really hope you enjoy my conversation with Corey, where he really gets into what the movie is about, but really start talking about some real things, too. You'll see what I mean. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for your follows and for your emails and messages. Talk to you soon. Thanks for joining me here on The Kissel. Tell my listeners about this new movie that we're expecting here on March 25th as we anticipate that. Tell us a little bit about that and how it kind of connects to the quarantine moment that we had.
Yeah, it does. It's a bit odd. So, yeah, it's a movie where half the people in the world are basically under house arrest and no one's allowed to leave their homes. We wrote and shot this well before COVID. It's a little odd for me as a filmmaker. It's the second time I've shot something where that happened. So I keep thinking like, I just need to make a movie where we're all like rich and can take care of our families. And then, you know, that'll happen. But it's very oddly, and honestly, in the most basic way, it's a movie about a guy who saves the world by standing naked in a window, and it'll make you cry.
Wow.
So it's super quirky and kind of fun, but it's like for the first time in the history of the world, there's this one world government and it's called contractualism. And it came from a place of just me really being worried about like my space and connection and a kind of a dark place in myself where I wanted to reconnect. And I made this as kind of a way of like, how can I convey this stuff basically? So in this world, Ward, who's the, you know, the title character, makes a drug that let everybody live in their wildest dreams. And he did that because he was suicidal, and he just felt like no one could connect because of the way things were. And he had given up on trying to make that happen. So he thought, well, if I can't make it happen, at least I can make it happen in a fake way. And really, if people went to sleep basically to live in their dreams, it's like, who would take care of them? And I thought about like the wealthy people I know from having, they're the people that give you money for movies. So I know some. And, you know, it's like they would give power of attorney to their lawyer. And so the idea was those lawyers started wanting to live like that. And so they found cheaper attorneys, and people kept going on the drug more and more until they started deputizing lawyers, basically. And at some point, half the world ends up on this drug. And they realize like, well, people can't keep going on it, or no one will get food, no one will anything, right? So in that process, and you know, like they have this one world government, and this idea comes out that everyone has a contract. And if your contract doesn't say you can do something, you can't, and you're gonna die. The only penalty for breaking your contract is death. So it's like, if you're a garbage man, you have to be a garbage man. If you're a newsman, you have to be a newsman. If you're in your house, you have to be in your house. And Ward, the creator of the drug, dies. And they make it, he's the only one that's allowed to make the drug. So because of bureaucracy, everyone on the drug is now awake, but they're just taken care of by attorneys that feed them through these like tubes. They can't even eat food. And this movie isn't really about any of that, as crazy as that sounds, but it's about a family that wakes up 2 years after that happened. And we come in 2 years later because we want you to kind of know they gave, like, they don't have hope that they're going to get to leave their house. And really, it's about a family that was doing whatever they wanted and now having to deal with being stuck in a home and having no rights and no connection. And in this very dark world, kind of the main character, Garp, is just very honest and starts finding that through connection, you can be happy. And so it's super dark, but as an audience, you kind of want to be there. And you really wouldn't want to be, but we're trying to show that message of like, no matter what's going on, if you're just honest with yourself, it's like showing people who you really are so they can do that too. And that by really connecting to each other, you can find happiness anywhere. And literally by trying to see this girl naked in a window in a very creepy way, this guy, like, I can say this part without ruining the movie. He like did whatever he wanted in his dream. And the only thing he wants anymore is to see this cute girl like naked in a window. And every night before she gets naked, she shuts the blinds. And like his brother and sister catch him one night, like doing this. And he starts telling them why. And at the end of it, he breaks down and he's like, you know, all I want to do now that I'm this like seedy old man, because it's like 20 years later, is see this girl naked. And that can't even happen. Like my simplest dream can't come true and I want to die. And his sister's like, you should get naked. Like if everyone that wants to see naked people in windows stood naked in a window, there'd be a bunch of naked people in a window. And so he does it and the girl sees him. And of course she doesn't get naked, but she's like, what the hell are you doing? And she laughs and he starts this relationship with somebody like through a window. And that act ends up saving the entire world.
Wow. And you know, just so people know, this is considered a sci-fi romantic movie. So it's not all doom and dread. So it's pretty exciting to know that there's all these relationships going on and there's all these interactions. And you're right. Like, how did you predict the quarantine, the pandemic? Because it's like so much of what we've been living for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's not that I knew there was like a virus coming, but more on the side of just, there was a night, I mean, again, this is dark. It's not, the whole point is from a dark place to have a happy thing. I was bedridden in my mid-20s. I ended up having a heart surgery, but I was in a lot of pain. And I was in a dark place and I was actually looking at how to shoot myself in the head online.
And, oh my gosh.
I know.
No, I'm so glad you did not do that.
Thank you. Well, that's kind of the point of this, right? And a newspaper, if you remember those, a fan literally blew a newspaper. And I actually carry this thing around with me to this day. And it was the obituaries. And there was somebody I grew up with in it. And I went to MySpace and found out that he had killed himself on MySpace, which was creepy. Like, and so I'm sitting there looking at really how to do this with myself. And then seeing this person I know, but not anymore, that I only knew now, we had been talking on MySpace, but we're not really connected at all. And I was like, man, things are getting really disconnected between people. And I had a nervous breakdown. And while I did, something just kind of inspiring started happening. And I was like, I had gained 100 pounds. I was really successful kind of young in Hollywood. And by really successful, I mean, I made a living, but that's hard. Yeah.
So, it is hard to make a living there and to do that.
And I was like really proud of myself. Like I don't really come from, you know, I was proud of myself. And then all of a sudden I'm like bedridden and I gained like 100 pounds. And in this moment, I started being like, if I could have just connected with him. And I was thinking about this girl that is really like the love of my life. And we connect in a very strange, and I couldn't reach out to her. And I just realized, like, man, I know I'm depressed, but more than that, I think I'm just disconnected. And I don't know if it'll make me happy, but why don't I just write something? Like, that's what I always do for that. And I was like, I need to make something. I hadn't written in a while. I'd been sick. I hadn't made art. And I was like, I'm just going to make something called Without Ward. And it's just going to be all about connection. And it's going to bring up all this dark stuff. And I'm going to reach out to this girl. And I'm going to call it Without Ward for the friend that had done that. His nickname was Ward. And so that's where the Without Ward part comes from. And I had no idea about these lawyers or this or that. But then I kept thinking about how when I went on MySpace, honestly, it was kind of disgusting to me. Like, people were saying things like, why'd you, but it felt like they wanted to look cool on a site, not that they can. And I'm like, this is a bad idea. And then I'm like, I feel like this is just going to keep going farther and farther. And I love being able to share things and this and that. Mm-hmm. But it seemed, and that's the part that I feel like has gotten way out of hand. Like, and especially with the younger generation, they're afraid to like pick up the telephone. And I don't mean that in a funny way. Imagine being feeling like I get a little nervous when I have to do something like this. I talk a lot anyways. I talk more.
That's great. I love it.
But like, that's why. But imagine like having that kind of feeling, like you got to get up in a stadium and speak when someone's calling you.
Right.
That's horrible. Like, or for the first time, like they're having less sex than any generation ever. And I don't mean that, like, I'm not saying sex in and of itself is a good, but like, actual love is, and like dating and right. like caring about people, those are nice things, like to connect to humans is, I again, I don't mean the like frivolous part of, but if that goes down, then that means so is dating.
And my generation, as you might recall, is, you know, we met at the mall for a couple hours and maybe played some arcade games, and we made that pop and that pizza last like for hours. And it was just that moment of connecting. And if the phone was ringing at home, we didn't know. We didn't care. The people we wanted to be with were with us.
No, I mean, it was so much. It's funny. I just got my dream house and I made a movie theater and a movie theater lobby. And it's not done yet. But like the whole idea is like I'm somewhere else now. But like I have it lined up just like good friends coming to visit for a week to a month, because I just want us to like hang out, like, and not like husband wife, like just to actually connect and be friends and enjoy. You're bringing up like the pop, like the candy and the nachos, and just actually be with each other.
Like, if you recall some of our homes growing up, it was like the center hub where all the friends met.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. Like, people just drop in, hey, what you got in your fridge, you know. Yes. Like, just people felt at home. And I love that. And I still have a 13-year-old. I still have a 13-year-old at home, and I really try to have that happen in my house, where her friends could come over. I come home from work, and they've baked cupcakes or something, and it's like, I love that. I want to be the center of like where they hang out, and I want them to have those memories. And yes, you're right. This generation is very consumed with what their image is online. And unfortunately, it's causing a lot of depression because of that, you know, unrealistic goals and people not really living those lives that we're seeing.
No, and I'm an example. I joke, but like, and I wasn't even on Instagram until this, and you do need to, right? And I have this thing with it, because it's like, if you were to just go into my photos and make an Instagram, I would look like the most interesting, happy, there'd be like private jets and like movie stars. And it's like, no, man, like I'm depressed. I eat a lot and I watch Star Trek. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my gosh, I'm a Trekkie.
Wait, what?
I did the same three things. I'm a Trekkie, a total Trekkie.
Oh my God. If you want to come, not joking, James Duval's coming next month.
Are you serious?
All we're doing is watching Next Gen in the theater, because we've never seen it in a theater and they have those Blu-rays. I'm not even joking. You're more than welcome to Atlanta. Yeah. Come out. Like, this is the kind of thing I want to have happen. And
you're in Atlanta?
I am now. I'm like right outside. Because Atlanta is affordable. It's crazy.
And you know, aside from the... Oh, yeah. It looks beautiful.
Less than my condo.
Yes.
It's so crazy. Like,
you know, aside from the original, Next Gen is my favorite. And yeah. then Voyager, like, just so you know.
You'll laugh. We have a, I love him, like a great friend, but part of me getting to know him and being so excited is Anthony Montgomery's in our movie, who's like the pilot from Enterprise. And I was like, so I always try to have at least one Star Trek person like somewhere.
That's good. You're just, then, he's like your Waldo, right? That you have a Waldo in everything you do.
And there's always one Star Trek thing in everything I write. So, and without Ward, it's the fact that if you break any law, you die. So that comes from an episode of Next Generation where this kid, Wesley Crusher, throws like a ball into some plants.
Prime Directive.
Yep.
Yes. I know that episode where they're all living like their best life and they have the best bodies. And it's amazing. Amazing. This came,
because I always take one Star Trek thing because I just
love it. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of the Prime Directive and how it applies to your movie, these people that were in these dreams, for example, they could actually choose at that time what they wanted to be like, what dream state they were in, correct? So they had control then?
It's so funny that you bring that up. We had all of these things answer. Okay. And we literally told you exactly what happened. And we decided to take all of it out. Because it's, in my mind, it was just way better to let everybody fill that in on their own. And I just felt, because we're all so different. And the point of the movie is connection. And I'm like, what better way to connect than like really let people have their own perspective? So I think it feels right because there are reasons. So we're not like, we know what happened, which we needed to make certain things continuitous and all that. But like, we didn't, I won't answer that if that makes sense. Because I don't want to ruin things for anyone. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, that's great though. That's great that you had that liberty. So, I was just interested to know, and I'll know when I see the complete film myself, but I was interested to know where people lean to the most. Like if you could have or do whatever you wanted, I wonder what people would do the most.
We have it represented amongst certain characters a little differently. So our main character is the guy that kind of did what everyone says they would do. Like the vain stuff, like, he ate, he had a bunch of lovers, he was a king, he was a rock star. Like, then like there was one character who kind of dreamt the drug away. So they were somebody that it's the sister, she's very intelligent and had, she would have been very successful in life. And so she just kind of lived life basically. And then there's a kid that lived in a world of acceptance and he was like six when he went in. But he's a homosexual guy and he just lived in a world where like kind of everyone could be whatever. And then there was the mother lived in a world where it wasn't even a world. She was kind of like gas. She had no time. And she's actually really interesting because she didn't know, she just kind of blinked. So she was 30 something. She wakes up and she's 60 something and she's blind when she wakes up. Cause she had like an issue. And then the dad is this very vain kind of character, like he's, you know, and I got to give all the actors did a great job, but James Duval, poor guy, I had him acting like he was in a sitcom, and we didn't tell the other actors because we wanted there to be extra tension with this. He's positive, he loves them, but all he knows is like how to be like everything's okay and to not accept reality like at all. And so I remember, you know, on set, you could tell like some of the actors were like, what's going on? Like in scenes. And there was finally a moment where I got to tell all of them, like, you know, not only did James kind of sell out for the role, but he knew people were mad at him and he bought into that, which meant the world to me. And it was so funny to tell everyone because they were like, oh my God, dude, like we just thought, you know.
I don't think I've ever met a writer producer who's also a mad scientist like you. So that's awesome. Because you're you know, dropping them in and they each know what they have to do, but they don't know what each other is doing. So then you see the reaction, the chemical reaction, which is awesome. And I think you did that. I read one of your interviews, just kind of trying to learn more about you, where you did that in an old movie where you didn't want to really record a real sensitive scene or rehearse a really sensitive scene. So it was kind of like a dry run. And yeah. You really get the best reactions from your actors then when you do that.
Yeah. And that scene, I actually know what you're talking about. That was like the hardest day of my life as a director.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I can barely watch it. It's, I can imagine how the audience feels, but like you, it was something like that. You feel it was very necessary for the point we were trying to make. And but like you have to deal with the fact that you thought of something that's like so terrible. And then, you know, when people see it, like you made it, it's weird. That's a whole,
I know what you're saying, yeah. But you know, even as a writer, I can relate to that where if I'm thinking of a storyline and I think, oh, well, what are people going to think that this thing actually went through my brain first. But at the same time, you have to think how this can be a benefit to someone who sees it and says, you know what, I've been there and this is going to help me get through it. And it either shows this is not normal and not acceptable, or this shows I'm not alone in this situation. So, I mean, I commend you for doing a very tough job and doing it well, because it's not easy as a creator.
And are you like screenplay? Are you author, like books? Sorry, I don't mean it that way.
I'm like, working. I have a couple of books that are just like, just small, like one, a little chat book, another is like poetry. And then I have a work in progress right now.
I can't do poetry. I do, but I'm terrible. And I always want to be, I can't. I get so jealous of you guys. I want to. It's like good poetry makes me cry. And then I just can't think that way. I'm too literal. And then I just get jealous. And I'm like, man, that's why I like screenwriting. Because you don't, it's like C spot rut. It's just the bone. You know what I mean?
Look at the work you're creating. It's amazing. And other than that, I do like theater reviews and just short articles and things like that. With the pandemic and everything shutting down as far as print, it's a little bit harder to get those jobs sometimes, but I'm still, it's picking up. Theater's picking up, and the podcast is helping to be a good outlet and letting people know about the work that you're doing. For example, it's really important to me because it's not your mainstream kind of story, and that's what I love about it. And you know, and I think like when you were describing the dreams or the states that each of your characters are in, it's really representative of a lot of things that we're aiming for sometimes as people. And it kind of, it made me feel like, you know, we want an easy solution to get to these goals, which would be like that drug, you know, you're induced and now you're living that life. And then you come to find out, you know what, all that's not necessary. It's not going to be that easy. And if you work hard for it, you're going to love it even more.
Yeah. And, you know? And that, it means a lot to me to have you like kind of take it that way, but like seriously, because my real hope for it, it sounds so idealistic. It's like, I really want people to see this and then like turn to their friend or that family member they know, but don't know. And just like, hey, I am this, you know, like I had this, it's like, it's okay to say something that you think your grandmother, but there's this character, you know, like a lot of people don't say things, unfortunately, to like women at a certain age, because we all have moms. And they don't get marketed to or dismissed. And this character, Beverly, is that. Like, I've always had great female friends that are like over 60. And I think part of the reason I do is because at some point in life, I was like, you're not like a mom. like you've totally lived life. Like, you like art, you like things.
You're this
like,
cool person. And, I'll show you a word in Spanish. I don't know if you know so much Spanish, but there's a word in Spanish for a lady that's a badass. And it could be that woman you're describing is a chingona.
I know, because it's my Aunt Margie and they're all Puerto Rican, but growing up with all of them, I kind of had a weird upbringing and just background in that I'm half Italian, half country that doesn't exist anymore. But I didn't grow up with a lot, but then my dad started kind of doing really good. But he would always joke, like, I don't want to offend any of the audience. He's just like, I hate snobs. So I would always get sent to Lorraine, which is kind of like a Flint, Michigan, to go stay in the projects, basically.
Yes.
With my uncle and like my Puerto Rican aunt, who's like my second family. And so that specific part of culture, she's just such a big impact. She's kind of my first super good friend that's over 60.
She's the chingona in your life.
Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. And everybody, yeah.
And you know what? It's great to have those experiences. I think that people think that it's going to be a wrinkle-free life because that's what we see our friends, quote unquote, doing on social media. But, you know, it's those bumps and those wrinkles that make you who you are, make you resilient. Like, if anything, we need to learn how to be more resilient right now.
Yeah. You know, and it's that. And so I think, too, and to not judge, we have these things that we say, and they're well-meaning, like, to be okay with somebody, you have to be okay with yourself. And it's like, cool, we should all be alone? Like, what are you talking about? How about we know without being mad? It's the hardest thing to do is to be self-aware. Because when you are, you see what's wrong with you. But the thing is, like, I don't really think it's wrong. Like, we all have flaws. We decide that. And I think part of the trick is not looking down on people for what's wrong with them. Right. Because you like, quit being embarrassed by what's not. Like, I'm super neurotic. I have bad self-esteem. I talk too much because I'm always uncomfortable. But, like,
but you know, so what? You know, the like, older I get, the more I don't care. The more, like, I'm happy with, like, you know what? I just want to do something that's not going to hurt my back now. And I'm going to be happy and watch another episode of Star Trek right now. Like, whoever wants to join.
Here, hold on. I don't know if you can see it in the glow box. So it's not my favorite movie, but that's the Star Trek Insurrection one.
Oh.
But it's just because I don't love the movies, but I wanted there to be like a, because here and in my theater, there's just tons of posters. And I'm okay. Like, Star Trek has to be there.
Yeah, and I know what you mean. You'd rather have the episodes.
Yeah, but I couldn't find a poster that worked because of the size, because it's those glow box frames. So I was like, Insurrection's my favorite of the movies. So I was like, I'll go with that.
Yes. And I love it. I love your connection to, you know, it's what's going on in the world today, what's going on in our minds today. You're aware of that. And I think that's really a lot of work for you. Like, you're trying to make a movie that's successful and beautiful, but at the same time, you're touching on all those points. So amazing. So
well, and I felt really fortunate that, you know, usually with something with this kind of budget, like, to get the cast we got, I mean, it was really amazing. And they all just were really in on the idea. I mean, that's really why. And it was fun. It was like a bunch of people that are used to a lot higher level of budget. And even the way we were on set, I mean, to be frank, was very different than what
I imagine. There was a lot of camaraderie there.
There was. It was very, it felt more like a summer camp than like a movie. And it was very kind of magical. Stressful is all get out, but magical. And it was so cool that I mean the biggest thing I'm upset at is, like, I wish Martin Landau was here for this. He was actually my mentor. If you ever saw that movie Almost Famous, I had that, but with movies.
Okay.
So I had a weird childhood, and I ended up in LA in the 90s with, like, Martin Landau and, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, living in these crazy places. Yes. He was so nice to me, and he just took me under my wing. He came to my high school graduation in Georgia. Nice. And everybody was like, are you kidding me? Like, and like, not in like some nice posh, you know, and was just so, and I never wanted to ask him to be in anything because I don't look at relationships that way. And I was so proud because I submitted it to his manager and it, like, got through, and he just was like, why didn't you call me? You know what I mean? Like,
you used the channels because you didn't want to abuse the relationship. Yeah. Which is, like, you know, but, you know, that's what, you know, like, how he went to your graduation. That's what we need to do more. Yeah. That's what we need to do more. Like, we're afraid to do that. Like, is that weird? Is that weird if I go? Is that weird if I invite them? Like, we should not worry about that. Like, just put it out there and see what happens.
Like, at all.
Yes, exactly. Well, Corey, I won't take much more of your time, but just let us know, what should we expect next from you? And what kind of premiere party are you having for the movie?
That's so funny. So I have health issues, so I'm still not supposed to leave my house. So none would be the answer. It's part of why I want people to come here. I would love to. I don't know if I'll get it done, but I've been working on this thing called El Duce that's crazy. And it's really about a really good friend of mine that passed too young. But it's called El Duce because it's how somebody I wanted to make this in like the early 2000s, but it's four parts and it's about a kid from foster care who ends up taking over America. And I know that sounds a little, but it's like the logical train of how that could happen. And I'd really like each part. There's four parts. And the reason I never tried before is back then, literally the only place that could have done it would have been like HBO. And so I didn't really want to write like a 1,000-page script knowing I had one chance, right? Like, but now there's all these outlets and it kind of dawned on me. And the idea is that like each story, I'd actually want a different director doing. Because the first part's actually like a love story in foster home that ends with this guy kind of landing in prison, being tried as an adult when he's not, and then being in, and him logically taking these steps without meaning to that end up with them overthrowing the government. And I learned how because of Mussolini, so I call it El Duce. Because he's actually a fascinating character. I don't like Mussolini, but there was this really interesting book I read called My Rise, My Fall. And it's kind of an autobiography. And so everything in it is things Mussolini wrote. And the first half is like before he was in power. And he says things like about how beautiful. You read it and you're like, I get why I like you. And it's creepy. Do you get what I mean? And then the second half is all him writing about himself, but in third person. Because he's so like narcissistic and he couldn't, it's like when he was running Southern Italy as like a puppet leader and he was so embarrassed that he couldn't even say I, and oh, him okay. Being defeated. And it's very interesting. And it got me to like, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And the answer to me was, and it's what, I don't know that I'm right, but I thought it was fascinating. It's like, he knows what's wrong with everything. But he has no idea how to fix anything, nor does he want to. And I thought about like how dangerous that is.
In the wrong hands.
Yeah. And I hate to say it. I don't want to get political because I want everybody to watch this movie. But when you hear someone in particular that can very easily point out what's wrong, it's really easy to gravitate towards that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I noticed that.
We have a solution.
Yeah.
That doesn't, it's good. You want to know what's wrong, but the person who fixes it needs to have an idea of something like to do.
Well, the advice my dad always gave me in my first jobs, he's like, don't go to your boss with a problem without having a possible solution after you state what the problem is. Because then you're just giving them more problems.
But I feel like we're in a lot of danger of like following people that know what's wrong, but aren't really offering anything in the way of what to do about that. And that's very sad to me. And so I want to point that out, basically.
That's great. And I like that you integrate the foster care system. I think that's an issue that should be more, paid attention to. A lot of people have gone through the system and a lot of people fall through the system. So kudos again for always, touching on something that I think is very important to our public. Not entertainment's fun and great, but I love that you
put those elements in. And that thing, like, we don't have a million years, but it's so complicated because you have like awful foster people that are like just doing it to take money. But then you get people that are like, oh, that's happening. And you're like, no, foster parents absolutely need money because somebody doing it in a good way needs to take care of those kids. And there are great foster parents out there.
Those are the ones we need to support. And we need there's to be, even social workers need better pay. Yeah. So much there. Oh, my gosh. I could tell that we could sit down for coffee and talk for hours, Corey. You're just really an interesting person.
I'm definitely going to listen to your podcast.
Thank you so much. And send us off with an invitation to watch your movie.
Oh, yeah. Without Ward premieres March 25th. Please pre-order Without Ward on Apple. We made it $5 because it was like the lowest we could make it. This is just very honest. Nothing helps us more than if we hit the charts on Apple. COVID kind of changed everything. So I'm just begging you, like, pretty please with sugar on top. So it would mean the world, just like one human to another. If you have an iPhone, it takes 2 seconds. You just hit like without Ward and you hit a button. And it's a really good movie. But it would mean a ton to us if you pre-ordered on Apple.
Please order and support artists. The next artist we could be supporting could be one of our listeners. I know we'll have a lot of creators out there who listen and talk amongst themselves. So you need to support these new platforms because this is the future. This is where we're going. So with that, thank you so much, Corey. Yeah. Thanks for being on the Kessel Podcast, and we will talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Great meeting you.
My safe word is cheddar cheese, okay?
Wait, what?
My safe word.
It's cheddar cheese.